This is Barry Mack. Sir Peter Cosgrove, along with his wife Lynn, served as the 26th Governor General of the Commonwealth of Australia from 2014 to 2019. He's well known to be generous with his time in retirement, getting actively involved with defence, health and many other charitable matters. These matters include serving as chairman of the Business Council of Australia's Community Rebuilding Initiative following the 2019-2020 bushfires. I'm most happy to say that we have General Sir Peter Cosgrove on the line. Good morning to you.
How are you?
I'm good. I appreciate your time very much. Thank you very much. How are you doing?
I'm really well. I'm probably in reasonable nick for talking on radio because I've been doing a fair bit of it in the last few weeks. So I hope I give you a lively session.
Well, I'm sure you'll get the hang of it after a while.
I've only been doing it for the last 20 years, so I suppose I'm still in my apprenticeship.
Well, that's lovely. I just wanted to have a chat with you about your biography.
Sure thing.
Yes, so give us a little bit of information on it, please, Sir Peter Cosgrove.
Well, I wrote one a number of years ago called My Stories, and that was not long after I retired from the military. And I really thought that with that one, I'd probably have exhausted anybody's interest in me as a public figure. It went well, and I sat back and did things that were now, or from that point, virtually private. I was on boards and things like that. And then out of the blue, I got the request from the Prime Minister of the day, Tony Abbott, to accept the post of Governor General, which I said yes to. So I did five and a bit years in that. And as I did, more and more things occurred that I thought, well, that's very interesting. That people would probably enjoy to find out a bit more about that. So essentially, over time, I thought, well, I better write again. So I called it another memoir. I gave it a different name, of course. I didn't call it My Story. I thought that was a pretty average name. But I then decided to call this one You Shouldn't Have Joined.
Yeah, that's a very interesting name, all right.
Yeah, well, Barry, let me explain. Just imagine you've got in front of you now 50 soldiers and you're the sergeant major and they're all terrified of you because you never bring good news, you bring jobs. And you stand in front of them and you issue them with their roster of jobs for the day and their faces fall because they're rotten jobs as normal, you know, things like hard work and all that sort of thing.
Indeed.
So you look at them and you size up the fact that they're just sort of standing there inwardly grumbling. So you say to them, come on, you fellas, remember, you're in the army and you just get on with it. We do what we got to do and we do it with a smile. And let me remind you, the old army saying is, you shouldn't have joined if you can't take a joke. So it's just an emblem of the fact that the army does all the tough jobs that are put in front of it and does so wherever possible with a smile and let's get on with it.
Well, where would we be without them? And for someone like yourself, you're a huge inspiration to those young soldiers. And why wouldn't they do it and do it very well? Because you ask them to. I understand there's an event is happening tomorrow, Wednesday, 18th of November, at the Concourse Civic Centre. You're going to be in conversation with Scott Whitmott. Is it a book signing event or are you just having a chat about the biography?
I suspect that it will turn into a book signing event because if anybody's there with a book, I'm going to sign it. I mean, from my point of view, I spent the last five and a bit years as Governor General signing my name endlessly on very, you know, lots of bits of paper. So I'm very happy to be signing my own book. So if people are there with the book, I'll sign it.
You need to be careful you don't get writer's cramp because I would imagine there'd be a lot of people there for that.
Yeah, but I'll tell you what they made me do. This is the publisher when the book was just launched. Took me out to a warehouse in Western Sydney, sat me down, and I signed 3,600 copies of the book.
Good God.
Yeah, so I didn't have any writer's cramp, but I did have a blister on my right index finger where you grip the pen.
That's a bit rough, all right. Listen, if you're listening to Sir Peter Cosgrove, of course, former Governor General, and much loved as well, I got to say. You've had a very, very interesting and busy life. Is there anything you'd like to change about it if you were able to go back there?
Yeah, look, I keep telling the rugby selectors and the cricket selectors that I remain available for the national team in cricket and in rugby union, but I'm not getting any younger and they need to get cracking or I won't be any good anymore.
Fair enough, I suppose. Have you had any interest in politics? A man like yourself, I would suggest, far too good for politics anyway, but just thought I'd ask.
Well, yeah, thank you for the question. And I was approached a couple of times in years and years and years ago, before I was Governor General, to explore whether I'd be interested in something like a casual vacancy, a seat in the Senate. And I declined vehemently on both occasions. I'm interested in politics only in so far as I see Australians needing to be supported by the elected government, and that the elected government needs to be put under the microscope by the opposition. Therefore, you're going to have those politics. But I always felt that you need to go into politics after a bit of life experience, certainly quite a bit, but not as an older person. So, you know, by the time I finished my military career, I was 57, and there was no way I was contemplating going into politics at that age. I would find it very difficult to sort of run around as a newly joined politician. It's just didn't suit my sort of plan for the life. So, no, I was never, ever seriously tempted to take up any offers.
Well, you were still a young fella at that age, let me just tell you. And during your reign as Governor General, 2014 to 2019, what did you do to the Prime Ministers? Three Prime Ministers decided to move on during your stay. What did you do to them?
I hope I had nothing to do with them moving on. But I was saddened by that. I knew them all. I mean, Tony Abbott was obviously the bloke that I'd who asked me would I accept the job, and so I have fondness for him. Now, I got on very well with Malcolm Turnbull, and I got on very well with Scott Morrison. I'd known them all for years, and to me, set aside politics, you know, whatever side they're on, I think I wanted them to succeed for the good of the country, because the problem with the internal machinations of political parties is a lot of Australians look at that and see it's all turmoil that is in some ways wasted, because that energy may well be equally or better applied to looking after us all rather than the internal fight. So I accept that is a problem, but also it is inevitable that men and women with ambition will seek to exercise that ambition through the political process.
At least we can do that in this country. We have freedom to do things like that. We're so lucky to be in Australia. When you look at our country right now, compared to the rest of the world, we're incredibly lucky, whatever crazy politics we might have here on occasion. Of course, very disappointing the three prime ministers had to go off and waste their energy, and maybe it's to do with ego as well. Who knows? But aren't we so incredibly lucky that we are in Australia?
Oh, yes. Well, look, I have so much admiration for the United States in so many ways. The way the United States has applied itself to its own freedoms, but also helped other people to enjoy independence and freedom from, you know, Nazism and all that sort of thing. I really admire them, but I don't admire their system of government above ours. I think we've got a better system.
Definitely, and also better politicians, and politicians who seem to be a bit more saner and a lot younger as well, and not behaving like children when they shouldn't. Democracy should be allowed to continue. But anyway, as I said, every time I look overseas, I too am very happy and very lucky that that I live here, and a lot of people should appreciate this country a hell of a lot more. It's really nice to have a chat with you. When you were writing your biography, did it trigger any long lost memories that you, good or bad?
No, well, you see, because if you live a reasonably public life, which I certainly did from the time I was in East Timor in 99, from that point on, I've sort of been in the shop window a bit. You canvass, you review, people discuss your earlier life with you at some length. So I've got good recollection of the seminal moments. And not all of them were wonderful. Example, after the Asian tsunami, we had a military relief operation up there. Then we came away because our part of the rehabilitation was over. But only a week or so after we'd left the place, there was a further earth tremor, and we had to. I sent a ship back up there on the government's request. I sent a ship back up there to resume relief efforts. And on the first day of their return, a helicopter off that ship was operating into the new area of damage, Nias Island, and it crashed. And 9 people were killed on that out of that helicopter crash. 2 very badly injured. So that was so sad. So I regret that. I mean, if I could go back in time and do something different, I would have. But that's the sort of thing that the game you're in sometimes comes down to what turns out to be life and death decisions.
Absolutely, so, yes.
People at the time of rendering assistance to the poor folk of Nias Island in Indonesia just lost their lives in the blink of an eye. And it was a shocking thing. It just underscores the game we're in is pretty dangerous.
Indeed it is. So, Peter, you seem to be the go-to man whenever things are bad. How do you feel about it? Do you feel a huge weight on your shoulders? Because governments do call on you whenever there's a huge dilemma, and you do such, you're such a good guy to have in situations like that anyway.
Well, yes, there's plenty of people who can do these sorts of jobs. I've got a lot of, institutional knowledge in the sense that I go back a long way now. I mean, my first example of a disaster relief was when I was involved in the aftermath of Cyclone Tracy in 1974 up in Darwin. But I was at a lower rank then, but I got plenty of good experience. And each time you sadly have to embrace the aftermath of a disaster, those learnings pile on top of one another and you become reasonably expert. So I think while I've got energy and all my marbles, I'll be able and willing, of course, to mentor, counsel, participate, whatever is needed in the aftermath of disasters. But here's the rub. There's plenty of other defence people now who've got similar experiences because the wide brown land, Australia, keeps producing natural disasters and there's an aftermath and the military's around and can be exploited.
Listeners, you're listening to General Sir Peter Cosgrove, and it's a really real delight to have you on the line. Can I just ask you, in all of the situations that you have solved and been involved with, how do you stay positive? How does it not get you down?
Well, you can see green shoots every time something amazing is done. Example, after Cyclone Larry, you could be excused for being extraordinarily sad and allowing that to pop through. When you were going through little suburbs of Innisfail or the town of Babinda where the full fury of the cyclone was felt, and you see people's homes absolutely wrecked. But then you'll speak to, for example, a homeowner, a lady in her 60s standing in her lounge room with no roof on the house and the walls collapsing, and all of her possessions are strewn downwind by hundreds of metres. Her life has just been blown away, and you'll be there ready to commiserate, and she'll turn to you and she'll say, "Oh, yes, yes, I..." You might observe that she's really copped it, and she'll say, "Oh, yes, I have, but the lady down the road, that's the one you ought to be seeing. She really is in trouble." And it's just selflessness that it's uplifting. You cannot factor that out. You've got to prize it. And indeed, there's a limit to how much people want to be commiserated with. They want to be assisted. They want you to say, "Help is on the way. We are going to do some very positive things to get you back on your feet." There's money, there's manual labour assistance, there's skilled trades assistance. You're going to get better, and we're going to fix it. So it's reminding people that Australia is a very compassionate nation, and that we won't forget them.
It also reminds people that you're the right man for the job. I'm just going to mention the event that's happening again tomorrow, Wednesday, 18th of November, at the Concourse Civic Centre. Sir Peter Cosgrove in conversation with Scott Whitmott. So it's possibly maybe a book signing. It's 6:30 to 7:30. People are welcome. You just need to ring up Willoughby Council and just get your name down, and I'm sure it'll be a wonderful thing. Can I ask you, how do you rate humour in the order, in the scheme of things?
Probably higher than a lot of people, because what I've tried to do throughout all my time is find, at the appropriate time and place, humour. There'll always be comics in amongst you. There'll be, people who are remorselessly optimistic and positive, and looking for a laugh in even dire situations. Now, when you've done the job, or when you are not in danger of trivialising the job, you want those people to be saying something funny, something uplifting, something that gets the mob laughing together, or looking optimistically at the future together. So, to me, humour is a wonderful ingredient of the transaction of leadership. Now, I don't put myself forward as a comic, but boy, can I laugh at a joke. I mean, I am... In the grim times, you will do your job properly, but there will be those moments when you're taking a short break, and that's when I can I can laugh. I can remember one time sitting with my colleague, the Secretary of the Department of Defence, at a particularly tense and stressful time in 2005, and we were sitting back in his office after a very torrid session over at the Parliament, and we were having a quiet whiskey, and we looked at one another. And one of us said, I can't remember him, "Oh, I suppose it could be worse." And then we just looked at one another and started to laugh, because we really couldn't imagine how it could be worse. So even in that, we were bolstering each other's spirits by sharing a moment of laughter in the face of a bit of pressure.
It's a good healthy sign. I think humour is very underestimated. It's wonderful, because as you said yourself, it releases a lot of tension whenever you can have a bit of a laugh, even if the situation is shocking.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, there will be times when you will not allow good humour to creep in. Let me give you an example. After the shooting down of MH17 in the Ukraine, back in Australia a couple of weeks later, we had a memorial service in Melbourne, and it was at St. Patrick's Cathedral. And it's one of the saddest periods. It was certainly the saddest period of time in my Governor-Generalship, because there I was sort of officiating at the National Memorial Service, giving a speech, and then afterwards being with the bereaved next of kin and family and friends. So no humour there at all, because it was such a serious matter. it was a time to embrace people and to say those words of solace and support, as you might say. So very serious times, but in amongst all of that, you know, you will find after a while that the rest of Australia gets on with their lives and the poor people who are bereaved have to somehow be helped into a state of equanimity. But in the rest of Australia, the character in the pub will be telling his usual funny stories, and the sports coach will be G'ing up his or her players with, you know, some light-hearted moments, all that sort of thing. Life will go on. Humour is part of the Australian way. We should never be so dour as to reject humour.
Well, that's why I like living here, because I worked with a lot of Australians when I lived in London many years ago, and I thought, you people are crazy, you're mad, I have to go there.
And, we're glad you did. Glad you did.
Well, I'm very glad, I'll tell you. I'm very glad indeed. But tell me this, are there lessons to be learnt in the way of approaching the current events, such as the COVID problem, lessons from maybe past disasters? And this indeed is a disaster.
Look, I think we will always learn lessons for our lifetime. One of the things about history is that we tend, with the best of intentions, to find history in some ways repeating itself, and the need, therefore, to relearn lessons that were profound in the first place. When the Spanish flu came to Australia in the late 1918, 1920, etc. It was a terrible thing, and we had lots of deaths. And of course, in the world, there was just a dreadful death toll. But the thing there was that there were lessons of isolation and personal hygiene and what have you that were guided by the science of the day. Now, the science has moved on enormously. We haven't had actually a pandemic of that nature until now. And even the SARS and what have you were not quite at the pandemic level. So we would say that we're relearning lessons now, but some of them are moderated by science, like a vaccine, and some of the ways in which we can ameliorate the spread of the infection without the vaccine being yet available. So I think we're doing a damn fine job, actually. And I think that one of the things I'm very, very clear about is that the this will be the making of the younger generation. I hope they don't think I'm being pompous or patronising when I say that. But young people who've become disenchanted through the loss of their job, the implosion of the economy, the lack of ability to travel around the world. We are sort of, Australians believe we have a birthright to be globetrotters, and that's been demonstrated over the decades, but at the moment that's not happening. So in all of these ways, we've got young people who've been chafing under the restrictions and getting frustrated, but I think by and large, the population, including young people, have been extraordinarily vigilant and disciplined in doing what the political leadership and the scientists have been saying. So I think Australia's behaved pretty well, and I think it will be the making of the generation that is now spans from, let's call it, in their 30s to people who are in their teen years. Those people resemble, for me, the same sort of folks who generations ago went through the Great Depression, World War II, and then in the 50s and 60s drove our economy to being a wonderful shining light in developed countries. We went there on the sheep's back, but also we became a giant quarry, but our economy went through the roof, and that's due to the energy and the confidence of that generation. I think this young generation will do that for us when we come out the other side of the coronavirus restrictions.
I think you're right. That's good advice. It's a horrible learning curve for them, but they haven't really got any choice. And yes, the positives will be taken out of the horrible negatives that's floating around. But again, it's good to be upbeat and positive, because it's better to be positive than negative. And I think in the end it'll work out. And we are incredibly, I keep saying this, of course, we are incredibly fortunate that we are in this wonderful country. Sir, you, you're a shining light of decency, and it's been a real pleasure having a chat with you, General Sir Peter Cosgrove. It's been lovely. I hope that you have a wonderful rest of the year from all of us from Northside Radio. A real pleasure to have a chat with you, and I very much appreciate all your time. You've been very generous.
Thank you, Barry. Barry, it's been good to be with you and your listeners, and I look forward to meeting as many people as I can at Willoughby tomorrow.
Yes, and I'll mention that several times, and I'm sure the other presenters will as well. Thank you so very much for your time, sir.
All the best to you. Bye-bye.
Thank you.